Well, hey, welcome Gundam Maniacs to the Gundam Explained show live. I almost forgot what it was called because I skipped a week and that completely messed me up. I was just telling Steven before this, like, yeah, it was like on Thanksgiving, it was just, we were chilling. It was kind of fun, just chilling at home, not really doing too much. And I was just like, yeah, I'm not going to stream. But then I kind of regretted it later because I missed doing it. There's always stuff to talk about and I needed an outlet. You know, so I hope everyone out there had a good Thanksgiving.
What about you? At my family Thanksgiving, we went around the table like people do and say what we're thankful for. And I was like, you know, I'm really thankful for the Gundam Explained podcast and how I'm going to get to go home. And then I was like, wait a second, that's not happening today.
Yeah, no, it was cool though. Like, I know we talked for a second and you had cool stuff going on. I had cool stuff going on.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Black Friday happened, and it was funny because I was checking out all the Gundam Black Friday sales, and there was nothing on sale anywhere that I didn't already have that I would want. And so I was like, I guess I'm going to buy some more Godzilla stuff. And so I've got some Godzilla stuff coming this week. They had some pretty cool Black Friday sales.
Well, so. It's so funny you mentioned that because, like, for instance, you know, Black Friday, Cyber Monday, there wasn't really anything going on, you know, P-Bandai related. But then I got an email that was like, oh, you know, if you fill out this survey for the Gundam Base Mobile Tour, you get free shipping from P-Bandai. And I was like, well, where was that, you know, during the holiday rush?
I know that's okay,
because honestly, like, you know, I would rather support shops like Art Rovo and P-Rex and
excellent. Yeah, because this is brought to you by, or this is sponsored by Art Rovo Gundam. Yeah, put the little graphic up there. Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah, link below. No, but yeah, that's it's interesting because at the same time I'm gonna be going to the Gundam base tomorrow at Anime Frontier. So part of me was also saving money for that. Even though, again, I think I have everything I want. I know that I will probably buy another one of those stands with the colony pieces because I love
those. Those are pretty cool.
Yeah. I know. Even though mine already broke apart, the pieces are nice to have for dioramas and the stand. It's a nice stand. So I'll definitely get that. But, you know, real quick, shout out in the chat. We've got Robert, Alan, Ultronimus, Xionic Shadow, Aoshi Sound, good to see you. That was the last weekend. And I feel like, was there any Gundam stuff you got into other than, you know, if, you know, people didn't watch it, yesterday's episode, Minai had a live showing off your Zeta Core
Gundam? Yeah. So it's currently in pieces because I think I mentioned on yesterday's show that, you know, there's still some work to do on this guy. The parts of it are finished. Like, basically, it's functional. It's just not fully painted, detailed, all that good stuff. I really love the navy blue paint job that I went with for those parts. I mean, overall, a very fun project. I don't know that I'll ever do anything quite that involved. And I say that while I'm in the middle of, like, carving up buildings to put, like, screens in and things like that. I actually, you know, if you're a member of the Patreon, I posted images of the, I printed out, like, water slide decals for a diorama of, like, Zeon propaganda posters and, like, pro-Federation graffiti that I'm going to put like on the sides of like miniature buildings to make it look like it's kind of, you know, this occupation going on where there's like Zeon posters that are like, tell on your neighbor. And then like, you know, Federation people coming and spray painting over them. I think my favorite one is it's like, you know, EFF one Zabi zero or something, like one Zabi dead, because it's after Garma's death. So,
okay, I want to get back to that, but real quick, just speaking of your Patreon, you also had the little event, the builder event, where it was like, what was it? Ascension?
Fusion.
Fusion. I knew it was something like that. Anyway, Ultronimus had a really cool build, so check out the stream yesterday. Yeah. It was using 30-minute missions, I think, it had your decals on there, too. That was...
Yeah, that was a nice touch. Very cool. And it had great story behind it. And, you know, I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff. Like any type of build that has some narrative behind it.
Yeah. And so going back to your thing, because I love this concept. And I feel like maybe this hasn't fully been explored, even though we have so many 1 year war stories.
Yeah.
Fully exploring like a Red Dawn scenario. Yeah. Again, I know we've talked about this where you have like this, it would almost be like War in the Pocket, except maybe they were teenagers and they were maybe they're in California and they were being invaded. Like while school was going on, you know, Xeon troops are dropping and they're trying to survive in the streets. Like,
I love the sound of that. And like, it's so funny that, you know, instead what we're getting is Otto's Gundam that we're going to talk about tonight. I'm sure.
Oh yeah, I know.
It's like, we are getting UC stories technically, but yeah. You know, none of them are the kind of stories that you and I kind of pitch out there. Right. I still love the idea of like a Departed style story in the Gundam universe you have like a double agent that is, you know, one side or the other, but then whatever the case may be, their handler gets killed or their handler is like in a coma or something. And so no one knows that they're undercover. Yeah. And so they can't blow their cover and they have to continue to do things that, you know,
that's good.
Which they kind of touch on that a little bit in Zeta, because like there's that moment where Requa had just joined the Titans and she's like participating in the colony or the colony gassing. And she's like, please, Camille, stop me. And he doesn't. And she's like, well, you know, I did what I could to.
Man. Yeah, that's a good scene. That's an example of a good scene.
That was great. Like, yeah, that little arc there. I think that goes to one of those things, you know, we've talked about it before, how, you know, is Requa an unfairly hated character? Maybe.
Yeah, but I think that's just the purpose of her, you know, like we see that a lot. But yeah, then it goes back to, again, the conversation we've had of a video game where it's survival and you're like trying to survive, not get caught. And then by mid game, you acquire a mobile suit and all, you know. Oh.
We are just publishing these ideas like crazy. Like, I mean, no. if anybody at Sunrise or Bamco was watching this, they'd be like, you know, this is good stuff.
Well, the next thing I want to talk about real quick before I talk about some other stuff is... No, actually, I'm going to get to that in a second. I want to talk about something else. Man, there's so much to talk about. You know, it's been a week.
Yeah.
So I've been watching a lot of Godzilla, and I know I've been mentioning it in some previous videos, but it's just crazy to think how many Godzilla movies came out in the 90s when I would not have access to that because I'm watching Hollywood movies. And, you know, once the Godzilla came out here in the U.S., I remember I saw it in the theater.
Awful, I even Matthew had Broderick.
Yeah. And I hope I have it somewhere, but they had a special ticket for if you saw and it came with like in a green Godzilla box or something. I must have lost it. But and then I just remember everything deflated after that. Like, I think at my age when I saw it, which I was in middle school or high school, like I thought it was cool. It's like that episode one thing where it's like, yeah, this is enjoyable. And then you don't really think about it. And then people just talk bad about it. And then you're kind of like, yeah, I mean, it wasn't what it could have been. And then, but in Japan, they just kept coming out with Godzilla movies anyway. And I love filmmaking. I love how, like when I watch a movie, part of me is watching how the movie's being made. You know, that's a big deal to me. And so,
yeah,
I usually forgive acting. I'll sometimes forgive the editing if they're trying to portray something with special effects. So it's been fun. I started with the 1984 return of Godzilla, or just Godzilla 84, and then the 89, then the 90 or 91. And then anyway, I went up. So I've been going through them and they are good movies. They are.
Hold up.
They are.
Yeah.
Do you say bad good movies? They're cheap good movies. You know, it's that thing that you came up with, the whole fast, cheap, and good.
Yeah.
But actually, they are fast and cheap, and they happen to still kind of have that.
Well, there's something to the appeal of like a campy flick, you know, like.
Yeah.
And it's possible to do a lot with a little. I think, there's probably a great example of like some movies where. 10 Cloverfield Lane is probably a good example. The ending of it is kind of dumb, but the movie, the premise of it, like obviously, you know, you've got aliens invading and this guy abducted some kids and he has them in his fallout shelter. So you have this very limited space. Like you're not seeing a bunch of sets. You're not seeing cities blowing up and things like that. So like the budget of this film is really low because it's just a handful of people in an enclosed space. And there's like this story going on around it. And so I think that that's an example of doing a lot with a little, because you can create all this tension and you can create this conflict without having to have, you know, these on location sets and like tons of extras running around in the background.
Yeah. And that's what's interesting about the Godzilla movies is they have these crazy ass stories and scenarios, but they go ahead and just try to do it anyway. And, and there's one Godzilla vs. Destoroyah where before it becomes the big kaiju, it's all these little ones like aliens. And so there's a scene where the Marines are going in and shooting them. I'm like, man, this is like aliens. And so later I was reading the production notes and they purposely tried to film scenes like aliens. And I was like, oh, I love it. You know?
Yeah.
There was also one, the Mothra one that came out in 91, 92. I forget.
Love Mothra. That's probably my favorite.
Oh, well, monster. Yeah. What was interesting about the story was, and I love the premise because it's something I've been into lately. It was like over 12,000 years ago, there was an advanced human civilization that existed and they were trying to control the weather and it ended up destroying the planet. And with technology, you know, trying to control. And I was like, wow, that sounds very much like if we look at like the ancient texts or what some ancient mysteries are, like it kind of alludes to something around that. I'm like, oh, I can really jive.
I knew that would vibe with you. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, what was the other one? You know, the other one recently I've mentioned the whole thing about there's, you know, that video out there, the orbs around the plane and people are like, is that fake? Is it real? And there's a lot of science behind it. That's very interesting. And yeah, one of the episode or one of the movies I was watching of Godzilla, I forget which one. It might have been one of the bad ones. There was this one bad one, Godzilla versus like Megagarius. I forget what the name was. Anyway, it talked about black holes and plasma, like utilizing, like it ends up getting into real science. Because when I looked into this stuff, a lot of people are just trying to talk about how can you explain this phenomena? Oh, here's the science. And it's like, wow, it's interesting how much Godzilla movies will take the time to explain real science and try to make it make sense. And then on top of that, I don't know if you heard on Netflix, there's that Godzilla Singular Point or something. It's an anime.
Oh, wow.
But what's funny in it,
hear about that. Yeah.
It's the same thing where it's all like heavy-handed sci-fi science, the whole, well, not even sci-fi, it's just science where they're talking about light refraction, how that can cause, you know, time travel because a light going in one direction gets filtered and gets to the place quicker than the it makes me think that maybe is another element, maybe on top of Japanese storytelling, and that's in the science fiction as they really try to explain with real world science in it.
Yeah, and that's something that we talk about a lot when it comes to Gundam too, like just the idea of like the O'Neill cylinders and like how the world building of these things makes sense. And you know, when you start asking questions like, oh, well, why don't they just use Wi-Fi to communicate with each other? It's like, oh, well, because Minkowski particles interfere with radio interference. And so it's like the whole concept of new types is like an evolutionary address to the problem that they're facing, which is like we can't communicate with each other because of this particle that interferes. So like that pseudoscience stuff is really cool to think about.
Yeah. Yeah. So I like appreciate how that is in Japanese. I guess that's another layer I'm learning that's kind of common in Japanese storytelling that is kind of missing in Western storytelling. I think either things are real science and it does a good job, like Mission to Mars or the Mars one with Matt Damon.
Oh yeah, The Martian,
which excellent. Like I love that style of thing. Or you get things where they just don't ever explain anything and it just happens, like a Marvel movie or something where, you know, things just happen.
And I think that that's what happened with the American Godzilla movie, right? It's like they kind of missed the point of Godzilla movies. Like they saw it as like, oh, it's a giant monster flick. Like we do that stuff all the time here. It's like we're gonna have a dinosaur that blows up some buildings and some tanks because, you know, we're Americans and we like to shoot things. It's like that's not really what Godzilla movies are about. Like there's always some underlying narrative that's trying to be spoken about.
Exactly. It's true. Even if it's goofy, like I think the King Ghidorah one from 92, there's time travel involved. Yeah. Like they go back in time and they go into the future to get technology to then go to the present. It's like, why? it reminds me of Back to the Future 2, where they had to go to the future to save his kids. It's like, wait, that doesn't.
Yeah. Why don't you just tell him and then you can prevent it from happening?
But it's fun. And yeah. So, yeah, I'm glad then you connected the dots with the Gundam, because I think that's what I appreciate when I'm. And I think it's almost like that in IBO, but even not necessarily hard science in IBO, but it's just explaining the situations. They're trying to use real world logic to make the fantastical seem grounded.
I think that is the hallmark of a great Gundam series, right? Is yeah. Sometimes the science can be forgiven, but what you're really looking for is whether or not the human behavior and the societal structures are believable, which that's the verisimilitude that you expect from a yeah. Gundam series. Is like, it's completely reasonable to see a faction like Zeon rise up. It's completely reasonable to see, you know, what happens in IBO happening, where it's like, okay, well, we have this technology that allows people to interface with these machines, but we can't do it if they're above a certain age because they have to have a smaller frame so that we can install this stuff in their back and stuff like that. So it's like, this stuff makes sense. And so that's why, whereas you take a show like, you know, I don't want to pick on Witch from Mercury. So let's pick on G Gundam, you know, like, the G Gundam story makes a lot more sense before they get into like the Dark Gundam and Devil Gundam and like the Dark Army and stuff like that, because that scenario, we saw it in Robot Jocks, right? Like people using, you know, these Gundam fights as a way of dealing with territory disputes, like that makes sense. But then once you start layering in all this other stuff, the story kind of fell apart.
Right. Itself. Which is kind of cool thinking about G Gundam. I almost feel like it is two different shows and could be. Like, I love the idea of the nations fighting and maybe keep it that surface level and more whimsy. But then I also like the Devil Gundam stuff that was going on.
It is cool.
You know, but then it almost seems like they kind of conflicted with, you know. But I guess, you know, when you have so many episodes, you know,
that gives you time. I mean, you could argue the same thing happened with, like, Double Zeta. Where it was like Double Zeta had this, the first part of the series was like very lighthearted and kind of had this monster of the week vibe, and like everything was kind of low stakes. And then they were like, yeah, this isn't really working for Gundam, so we're going to ramp it up. And like Haman's going to be this big bad guy. And of course they, you know, made it much more dramatic.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Because all good points. You really blew my mind there, just kind of connecting the dots with why I'm really getting into Godzilla. But also when it comes to like the filmmaking, I like the special effects. Even though I can recognize, and so far out of all of them, my favorite one, even though I feel like the earlier, the 90s ones are really awesome, Godzilla 2000, I feel like they were at the peak of suit special effects.
Yeah.
But I feel like the production design was purposely making it look like less is more. Like where a lot of times it would be at night and you just see this Godzilla suit standing there with light behind it, and the sets weren't too much. It was just enough to like evoke more of a feeling rather than, oh, look how real this is. And that's a good way to go about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you said the same thing about like Requiem for Vengeance, right? Like when we first watched that together, it was like, oh, you know, there's a lot of nighttime battles, and like the way that the Gundam is framed, you're not seeing lots of Gundam action. It's more like a, you know,
it's in the background as they're like trying the
fires
to
in the back. And
yeah, no, that's a good point, and I think that's really important filmmaking. So, and that also goes to, and I completely forgot the names of everything. But the new guy directing the Gundam movie, his show, Jim Mickle. Okay, his show did that because it was having things go on in the world, and they were trying to explain babies being born as half animals by talking about a virus, you know, science stuff. So again, there's, to me, and maybe I'm just super positive, there's so much about what Jim Mickle has done that lends itself to Gundam. But hey, could be alone on that. You don't seem to be like, oh yeah, you're probably a little,
I probably am a little, and maybe I'm just jaded. You know, I typically, I'll definitely adopt a wait and see. You know, I won't be, obviously I'll be excited to see any kind of Gundam fight, but like, I don't know. I think I floated a rather weird conspiracy theory on Discord the other day about Tomino and Anno and their relationship and how they're like the Beatles, or Tomino and like Yasuhiko and Okawara, like the original core Gundam group, they're like the Beatles, and Anno is like the Yoko Ono that came in and broke up the Beatles, and like Tomino is supposed to be kind of like John Lennon, and he got pulled away from that group, and so it's like the last 30 years of Gundam stories have all kind of like not quite hit
Zeta Peak. That's interesting. That's an interesting way to work to go about it, because we always talk about the idea that the special groups sometimes working together can really come up with something, and then what can, you know, split them apart. I mean, even like bands, you know, we see that a lot. Like even like when Iron Maiden, I got into Iron Maiden, and then there's a period where the singer left and there's a different singer. And it's funny because the singer doesn't write the music, but it still wasn't the same.
Dude, I mean, Van Halen, like, without David Lee Roth, like, David Lee Roth brought so much personality and so much stage presence to the band that, like, even though Eddie Van Halen was the talent, like, you still need that face of the band that makes something.
Yeah.
So, I don't think you're totally spot on.
Yeah, and then to bring up another example, because I just remembered on my Warped, my Spotify, or Wrapped.
Oh, yeah.
Wrapped for 2024. It was all Castlevania music. But I also listened to a lot of the new Judas Priest album, and they had Halford do a special message or something, because I had, you know, not just to me, but no, but it's funny. Same kind of thing. In the 90s, Rob Halford left Judas Priest, and the guitarists were then playing lower tuned guitars because this new singer, even though he's cool, couldn't hit the highs. So the music sounded different. Not that it was bad, but I think that's kind of interesting where, the right team together can really make something happen. So speaking of the right team together, now I'm going to show something on stream, guys. The year in Gundam 2024. This is going to happen next week. Day one, Midnight Hatter Live. Day two, the Gundam Explained show. And this is brought to us by Sieg New York and Art Rovo Gundam. So what we're going to do is, it's like the Oscars of Gundam. It's like the Game Awards, except better. Okay. Yeah. So, day one,
less Hideo Kojima. I'm not promising zero Kojima, but
because honestly, when it comes to Gundam, I think he would be a good fit for a story, in Gundam, to be honest.
That would be pretty wild.
Yeah. So what we're going to do is, day one, I'm in a Hatter Live. It's going to be where we're going to discuss the top Gunpla Builders World Cup entries, the top Gunpla of the year, and the top video games of the year. And actually, before I go forward, there's a link in the description right now for a Google form. You can go and fill out what you want, because we're not going to say what's best. We're going to talk about what everyone likes and what was fun and what was cool. So day two, the Gundam Explained show is going to have where we're going to talk about top creators of 2024, just cool, you know, creators that are out there making Gundam content. We're going to talk about the action figures and collectibles that got released in the movies and series that got released this past year. Because really the idea is to do something like an award show. But at the end of the day, I always feel like award shows come with baggage, because I don't like the idea of, you know, it's like, oh, well, this should have got voted in this. And it's like, you know what? I get it, because everyone has their own opinions. And
the best part is, like, because it's just a couple of fans putting this together, like, you know that there's no pay to play. Like, nobody's.
No one's come to us to be like, hey, make sure we're top. No, it's. So link in the description for this. I'm going to post it later on socials. We have some little videos that we're going to be sharing to kind of promote it. But yeah, we want to start doing this every year. So to remind everyone, here's all the cool stuff that came out this past year, things related to Gundam that happened. Also open to suggestions if anyone has anything cool, because in that form, there's space if you wanted to type some extra stuff that you think should be recognized. So
Absolutely. I love this idea of just, you know, kind of wrapping up the, you know, it's our version of the Spotify Wrapped, right?
Like, oh yeah, there you go.
This is Gundam, right? Like, it's just pretty cool to kind of look back, because I think when you start thinking about it, this really was a huge Gundam year.
Yeah. Like,
we got a lot of stuff.
I know. And it's funny, because even though we got a lot of stuff, there's still a lot that's coming soon, which is crazy. So that does bring us to the next topic. Very good. Well done, Stephen. And that's
going to be this for a living.
No, but that's going to be about the new Hideaki Anno Gundam show, which I am not going to say what it's called because I do not agree. Even though I like ducks, I love ducks. In fact, I love Daffy Duck. I love Donald Duck. That was one of my favorite things to draw in school because I could do the beak really well.
Really?
Yeah. The little duck beaks. There's kind of a art to it, and I like penguins. Not related, but kind Jim Carrey was in Mr. Popper's Penguins, and he's in Sonic. I'm getting off
track. This is like the 6 degrees of.
I know. But no, really, G-Quax is what people are saying it's called. I believe once it gets its official Western localization, it's going to have a more name relative to the content.
I won't say what I've been calling it.
Well, no, what's interesting is when I did the video for it, I was using the Japanese website. And on the Japanese website itself, that's not on the English website, but the Japanese website had a citation above the name of the show with the 6 U's in it. Yeah, that's the name. And it said Sieg Axe. Okay. And so some background of the story is this is actually an alternate Universal Century story where they didn't go into too much detail. They just said Char won the war, but it could have been during the 1 year war, Char won. And so the Principality of Zeon is now the ruler of the Earth Sphere.
Yeah, the Principality of Char. And I think they also mentioned that he stole the Gundam, but they don't say, like, the Gundam, like, from Side 7. They just say, like, he stole a Gundam.
Yeah.
And
So that's what's interesting, because we don't know at what time this takes place. Could have this been early on that Amuro didn't even get to the Gundam, and Char and Denim and whoever...
It's fair to say, like, we know that the series takes place in 0085, but we don't know when the events that precede the series take.
Yeah.
I know because that's a very minute point to make, but I know that the chat's going to blow us up on.
No, but that makes sense, I think, because the other thing, too, is there's some concept art out there. Now, we saw the main mobile suit, which is not a Gundam, by the way. We noticed the box art, nowhere it said Gundam. But there is concept art showing the Evangelion looking designed typical Gundam, like an RX-78-2. It had the colors, yeah. But it also has that sort of biomechanical look, you know, that's popular with Anno's stuff. But also they had a red version and it had Elmeth bits on it. So didn't Amuro destroy those?
Well, theoretically, if Amuro never got the Gundam, then he would have never destroyed the Elmeth.
Exactly. So that that's what makes me think either, like you said, he got it at the beginning, or like you said, it could have been any other time, but it had to have been sometime before that battle. And I wonder, though, if he would have had to take out the Zombies first. So maybe it's a point after taking out the Zombies. But before,
yeah, the story doesn't really mention it, or like previews that we've seen don't really mention anything about like the existence of the Zombies in this series. So,
And Alan Mitchell's asking, is it based on Garen's Greed lore, or think it's an all new AU? So they said it's an alternate UC. Alternate UC. I don't know. To me, it seems like Anno's probably going to do his own thing. Really.
Which, like, people have been floating the theory of, like, alt UCs, like, ever since Thunderbolt came out and Origin, right? Because people hate Thunderbolt and Origin and Moon Gundam, and it's like, it's so funny now that, like, we have Sunrise confirming, like, this is alt UC.
Dude, I am so glad you brought that up, because that's now the other thing to add when someone in Discord's like, well, technically, they're not canon. It's actually, yes, they are. They are there, you know, and now we can say for sure. But what is alternate is, you know, something like G-Cucks, you know, whatever they're going to call it. I'm going to use probably every name by the end of the show.
Or yeah, Shin Gundam, I think you called it earlier.
Oh yeah, Shin Gundam. Yeah, maybe I need to keep saying that because, you know, after Shin Godzilla, watching Gundam, you know, because I didn't get into Anno stuff until after getting into Gundam. Yeah. And I think his stuff is pretty consistent. I couldn't get into Evangelion, but the idea of Shin has always, like, even Shin Kamen Rider. I don't know anything about Kamen Rider, but that Shin Kamen Rider was pretty cool. There was a lot of gore in it, more than I wasn't expecting. Okay. So what's neat about this series is we're introduced to a few characters, but apparently some character has this mobile suit that we see. That's what the main one they show, that Gunpla is coming out in February. I guess someone gets a hold of it, or like a girl. It sounded like then a girl gets it.
Something like that.
And then like they do these things called clan battles where they actually just go and fight, but it's not to the death. It's just you destroy the head. But you know, it was interesting too, because I remember when I was first looking at the lore, I'm like, okay, well, is there going to be a bigger implication? Like there's going to be corporations or governments. Now that we know it's alternate, you see, it could be. It would be really neat to see if there's some like sort of Federation remnants. You know, and we're seeing battles of Federation remnants with some GMs or something. I mean,
that'd be pretty cool because we don't really, like, from the trailers and stuff, that we don't see anything Federation. We do see a Mono Eye mobile suit. A lot of people are calling it a Zaku. Right. I don't think it's a Zaku. Like, it has a Mono Eye, but like, right.
There's not a lot about it that you could say is Zaku like yet, except. Yeah.
It honestly reminds me a lot of like the Jinro, like the Wolf Brigade anime.
I've seen the artwork of that. Yeah,
yeah,
it does have that look to it. Yeah, and then the other thing, you know, going back to that name, Zigax. So yeah, this taking place after, it's like an alternate UC where it's Zeon 1, Victory of Zeon, Zig Zeon. And, you know, we sort of associate the Heat Hawk, the axe, with Zaku's, with Zeon. And so for Bandai and Sunrise to have a Zeke axe above that, you know, it almost tells me
the titular mobile suit has a Heat Hawk, is like an emblematic weapon, is,
and it doesn't look, it's not like it's a, that's not a crazy modification. Like out of all the things they design crazily, they didn't touch the Heat Hawk, and that mobile suit's holding it.
And it also has like beam sabers anyway. So it's like, it's using the axe for a reason. Like it doesn't have to.
So I think, like, I'm going to make a guess here that when it comes out in the U.S., when it has the official U.S. localization, it's going to be called maybe, it might be called like Victory of the Axe or something along the lines of that, almost evoking, you know, like Witch from Mercury, you know, like that. You could distill that into, oh, this is what it means. But it's still on the surface, you don't know exactly, and it could be the same.
I just had kind of a silly thought. Like, you notice how every time Sunrise has trademarked a phrase or a word that, like, that gets leaked out? Like, there was SD, G-Generation Eternal, Requiem for Vengeance, Silver Phantom.
Yeah.
And then what was the last one? Witch from Mercury. Yeah.
Yeah.
So every time they try to trademark something like an English word mark, you know, word gets out. Maybe by not having something like Victory of the Axe be the name, they're just like, you know what? Screw it. We're going to call it G-Quicks. And then nobody's going to trademark that. And nobody's going to know what it's about. So how about that?
Actually, that's a good point.
Ultimate troll.
There hasn't been a leak of some name that, or trademark or anything. So that could maybe be telling that maybe they aren't going to change it. But I feel like they have to.
Well, and that box art, like, it's not like that's a printed, like, that's just cover art. Like, that's just like preview artwork, right? It's like samples. So that they could probably change that, I imagine, before it goes to production.
Yeah. I think especially once, because I think when they said the Gunpla is coming out, it never said anything about a U.S. release and even the show coming out itself. So it's probably like an OVA because it did say that on January 17th, they're going to release it like as a film, edited down as a film. So it makes me think it's not going to be many episodes, which is fine. But also, it didn't say anything about some sort of English or American release at all. So,
yeah,
which is interesting. And it's interesting because the news came from the Gundam conference. That was all right. In Japanese. And then they just had videos, though, translated in multiple languages. So it wasn't like just English, but it was other languages too, in regions where they didn't announce that anything was going to get released.
They did the same thing with like the Gundam card game. Like there's like a 40-minute trailer for the Gundam card game, and they have the Japanese version and like the Asian version. And then they have like the Hong Kong, Singapore, United States, Eurasia version of the video. They're both available on YouTube. So that's an interesting, but you know, you're the one who brought up that they didn't announce the English release of Kukuru's Doan's Island either.
Yeah.
So that one flew completely under the radar.
Yeah. And that's interesting too, because that also has kind of a goofy name, in my opinion. What do you think? If I was in charge, I probably, with the Western release, wouldn't have it called that. Because maybe Cuckoo's Doan, one, it's a weird name to say. It doesn't roll off the tongue. And it could be that people that want to get into anime or English anime don't know who that is or don't know the background story like someone in Japan might, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I might call it something like Doan the Defector or something like that, you know?
Yeah, or something to do with Origin, just because it's that style of artwork and that's well-received here. So it could be like, you know.
We talked about that with like Code Fairy too, where it's like, maybe by calling it Code Fairy, you kind of shot the potential of it in the foot because the game is fantastic. Like it plays great.
Great story, great game. But Code Fairy, I also feel like doesn't help with the name because like, for someone that wants to try out a mech game, if they see Code Fairy, like, and it reminds me of back when I was playing Rise from the Ashes on Dreamcast, I was never calling it Gundam because that word is just, you know, when we were talking about things pronounced differently, even the way we pronounce Gundam, the way Gundam is pronounced in English is not how it's pronounced in Japanese.
Yeah.
That's just another example of that. And so when I would see, I remember when I bought the game, I remember I got it at an EB Games or GameStop. I remember the same one I got it at. It's not open anymore. But I just remember calling it Side Story. I would call it 79 Side Story. I just always called it that. And
which is so silly. Like, side to what?
Yeah, exactly. And just for me, it's I wanted a mech game and I was playing. I was like, this is the most amazing mech game ever. And never associated it with Gundam. Because
crazy.
So it's very interesting. Like, I wonder if they, you know, it for English or American releases, they could put, you know, Mobile Suit Gundam, but then real big, just Rise from the Ashes would, you know, for that game. Then I think in the reason why I bring this up too, there's the Puritan in me of Gundam that I like Gundam and I like it to be what's intended, but I also want to get more people to enjoy it, you know, more people to find out about it. And I think a lot of times they have to think about how they're naming these things.
And just to, you know, just to express that this isn't like coming from a xenophobic place or something like, oh, you know, Japanese people don't like this is something that's done in English, franchises too. Like Game of Thrones was not called Game of Thrones. It was like the book is called Song of Ice and Fire. But if HBO had released a series called A Song of Ice and Fire, people would have said, what the hell is that? That sounds stupid. So they went with the subtitle Game of Thrones, which like the book, you know, the subtitle is Game of Thrones. So it's like, okay. Game of Thrones sounds badass. But like, you know, if you change it around. So it's what you're talking about is not something that's like, oh, we're just picking on Japanese franchises. It's like
that's kind of done when mediums are transferring or translating. Yeah, that's a really good point. And I bet there's so much more that I'm not even thinking about that we see all the time. You know, even thinking of what to name something in general, like Halo.
Yeah.
You know, like it doesn't necessarily have to be about Halo rings at all. But
it's kind of funny because like that stuff never even came up. It was like, okay, we're going to play this game, Halo Combat Evolved. Like, I see that there's like this soldier on the cover. Like, it's obviously a shooter, but like, no one ever really questioned why it was called Halo until they got to the end of the game. And it's like, oh, okay, I make the connection now. But
yeah, no, that's a really good point. Yeah, when things have. And then I guess talk about Godzilla. That's a great branding already. You know, you don't have to do much with that. So yeah, case by case with certain IPs, I think it's very important how they go about the branding. So I would say, and you know, it's one of those things I think I've even recognized as someone that's getting more into Japanese things, into anime, that, you know, growing up when I'd come across it, these names would be so goofy that I was just then moving on to the next thing, you know?
Yeah, when you hear a name like Bubblegum Crisis, you don't think like
exactly.
Yeah, that's exactly the mecha I'm looking for. Like,
it is so crazy because I watched that for the first time maybe a year or two ago, and I think it's amazing.
Yeah,
and what I had in my mind since reading video game magazines in the 90s, where I would see that brought up, what I was thinking that was, I think I always thought something around like Sailor Moon, where it was that type of thing. You know, and for it to be like a badass, like it's almost mecha because they do have these suits they wear, but like Terminator, it's like Terminator, Cyberpunk, like it's so crazy that I missed out on that stuff, but I'm getting to revisit it.
There you go.
So I know it kind of works out. Oh no. So I'm just trying to think of other interesting examples, like, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh yeah.
Like, sure. I know in some regions they had to change it to like, I think Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles. I want to say, I heard like in Europe they had to change it to Hero because Ninja was associated with a bad thing.
Oh
yeah. Then and I even think some places didn't use Teenager Mutant or whatever, you know?
Well, I mean, even something as like emblematic as like Star Wars, like the first movie could have just been called A New Hope. But it wasn't, you know.
Oh,
Lucas
yeah.
decided, I'm going to call this movie just Star Wars. And, you know, if it's successful, then at least I can build on that. But, like, he always, in his mind, knew that it was called A New Hope. Because even in the title credits, it's like, oh, episode 4, A New... What? Like, this is... I thought the movie was called Star Wars. Like, what's going on here?
Yeah. No, dude, that is a great point. Because that's part of... what made George Lucas successful is his marketing brain at work, even though he know he wanted to tell cool stories influenced by Japanese storytelling, you know, which is going full circle again. But yeah, titling it Star Wars. And then I think what they did was shortly after, I don't know if it was after it was popular or when Empire Strikes Back came out, when it was back in the theater, I think they then added the A New Hope. Or something like that.
Oh, was that it? Obviously, I wasn't around then, but...
I think it was, like, after it was popular in the theater, they went back and added the episode 4, A New Hope, to, like...
Okay.
Even though that was his intention the whole time still, anyway. And see, Star Wars can get away with... I remember when they would come out with the titles for, like, the prequels, like Phantom Menace. At first, I was like, that's a little wild. What does that even mean? And then I think Attack of the Clones was... That one was funny because that sounded silly, but it also sounded badass at the same time. So, and then obviously Revenge of the Sith is awesome. But then even thinking about then the sequel trilogy. So now Disney is then in charge of the branding, and they have Force Awakens, which it almost seems kind of boring because it almost kind of says, yeah, nothing's been going on. But now something's happening.
Yeah, you know what I mean? There's almost like it's too vague because like, so for instance, you know, you said Phantom Menace, like the Phantom Menace, it's like, wait a second, what's like, what is the Phantom Menace? Like what is it about? Like there's a specific connotation that comes from something like that. When you say like, oh, the Force Awakens. And at this point we all know what the Force is. Yeah. And we all know what waking up is.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, so, well, what does that even?
Yeah.
It's just too vague.
So they did it in the reverse marketing where it's like, okay, what's marketable. And now we'll write around it.
I think that you nailed it because, you know, if you look at those titles, it's like, you know, Rise of Skywalker, like they wanted to have Skywalker in the name.
Yeah, they had Return of the Jedi, the Revenge of the Sith, and then the Rise of Skywalker. Yeah, trying to go, and then Last Jedi. So that name is so freaking awesome, but I don't really think it necessarily works in the movie. Like, even though I guess you could say Luke Skywalker, because then he's confronting and he's getting himself killed. But, you know, like they didn't really do much about Jedi. It was more about someone as a force user accepting it or not, you know?
And I mean, it's also like, it's almost not true. Whereas, you know, something like The Last Ronin, that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles comic, like, have you read that?
I've seen the box art on the action figures when I go to Target. Cool. Yeah. It's, have you read that or know the story? Cause I know they're making a live action movie of that.
They are, which is super exciting. Like, I'm not going to spoil it. Obviously, I'm sure everyone in the chat already knows like what the ending is, but you know, the idea that it's like, oh, The Last Ronin, and it's all about one turtle. Like, well,
yeah, that's what's cool about it. That's the one plot point I do know about, and I find that very interesting. It's funny with Ninja Turtles, you know, speaking of Ninja Turtles and branding and all that, they've had 1, 2, 3, at least 3 video games come out this year. And DLC for another one. Yeah. There's a turn-based game coming out. They had the one based on the movie from last year come out, and they had an arcade game from 2012 come out, and then the DLC for Shredder's Revenge. Oh, and the roguelike on Switch. It went Apple Arcade last year to Switch. So they're on point with their video game
marketing. Well, and a lot of those types of like 80s franchises are coming back in a big way, because like Double Dragon...
That's right. Was on River City Girls 2.
Yeah.
And they had the DLC. I was just playing that this morning. Yeah, the Double Dragon. And it's funny because there was Double Dragon releases last year. There's a Double Dragon game coming out next year. And so that is also a good name, Double Dragon, the alliteration. Okay, you know, let's keep on this subject here real quick, because Mobile Suit Gundam. Like, even though, like, if you were to start over again and you were in charge of marketing this anime franchise in the U.S., would you use the word Gundam?
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely would. I would probably lose Mobile Suit in the title, though. I would probably say something different, because, you know, when you look at something like a fantasy novel or something, there's always something kind of like the legend of Anataxia or something like that. You always have like one fantasy word that's built into a phrase that's like,
I was gonna say, because I love Mobile Suit, because ever since I was a kid too, the same thing, like Exo Frames, Power Loader, I've always liked to come up with what's a cool name for a mech, you know?
Yeah.
And then once I finally got around to Mobile Suit Gundam, I was like, oh, Mobile Suit is a great name.
Which is funny, because that's like kind of Tomino's thing, right? Like all of his mecha anime have like, you know, Mobile Frame such and such. Or like,
and then
Power Fighter Vifam, or like, you know, it's always
like, and I like that stuff. But you know what, that's interesting, you know, because I guess you would use Gundam because the series is about that. But it's just interesting though that they changed the pronunciation. I wonder how it worked. Did an American exec or whatever that wanted to dub it or whatever go like, oh, Gundam? Like when they first saw it, even though the first one was Gundam, the first dub. So that, because even that's kind of odd to say Gundam, like, hey, you know, let's watch Gundam. It's like, what'd you say? I find it interesting that, I guess, branding and everything kind of got to the place where it coalesced into pronouncing it the way we do in English, and it for it to work to a degree. And maybe that's another thing that does hold it back. Cause you mentioned Gundam to someone that doesn't, you know, that's just a thing they don't know, you know?
And it's just one more barrier to like explain what it is, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because if I ever get in a discussion with someone, they ask, you know, what do you do? What are some of your hobbies? I'm like, oh, I make videos for a YouTube channel. When they ask, what is the YouTube channel? I say, oh, I cover this Japanese property. It's like Star Wars in Japan. It's just, I like it a lot. It's, and I'm like, oh, what's it about? And it's like, oh, it's about these giant robots, you know, but it's not what you would think from Japan and giant robots. It's a little different. It's their more mature stuff. And it's so hard to, so I guess the quick way is it's a more mature Star Wars from Japan. Yeah. But so then if we were going to go to Zeta Gundam, I think that's a badass name. Like 100%. Yeah. Like, nothing like even double Zeta. It's like, hell yeah, where's the triple Zeta?
Yeah, like keep stacking Zetas. Well, and it's so funny because and this is going to be such a weird aside, but when I first started watching Dragon Ball, my brothers and I watched it in Spanish because that was the only way that we could watch it.
And you mentioned that before.
What's interesting about Dragon Ball Z in Spanish is that it was Dragon Ball Zeta. And so I always like made this connection. I was like, wait a second, Zeta Gundam, Dragon Ball Zeta, like there's, so there's, it's like that's Zeta's like this thing. And I was like, oh no, it's just a Greek letter. Like everybody uses it.
That's kind of cool though. When you're a kid and making those connections.
Yeah.
That reminds me real quick. I remember there was a guy, I forget who told me this. It'll be funny if it was you, but they would play like Final Fantasy and other games. And in their mind, they were all one universe. Like every time they play a video game, to them it was all one universe.
That definitely wasn't me, but that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean it's cool when you're a kid and the imagination where it takes you, you know.
Oh yeah, I mean I used to have like, I had a box about this big that contained like all of my action figures, and it was like Iron Man, Mega Man. I think I had like Princess Jasmine and the Tiger from Aladdin. I ironically did not have Aladdin. And then I had like the Red Ranger. And oh, so I cool. was like trying to come up with stories that involved all of these different franchises that made them all work together. And I was like, okay, this is.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. You know, I was really big on, I was probably annoying to play toys with because things had to be in there. But me and my friend were both like that.
That's not what he would be doing.
Because we always had the Marvel characters were together, or Ninja Turtles or Star Wars. But then once my older half brother gave me a bunch of G.I. Joes when I was younger, and I was like, okay, I can actually do anything because I don't know their stories. They just look like people. And then I saw that movie From Dusk Till Dawn. And so I would just make like a bar scene. Yeah, as a kid, making a bar scene with all these guys and then vampires coming out to kill them all. And I
was like, oh, God.
But okay, Char's Counterattack. That's a cool name.
See, and that, I think that there was a bit of that, like, that cross influence, right? Like, I think that Tomino saw, you know, Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi and was like, ooh, okay, Char's Counterattack is kind of like Empire Strikes Back. Like, okay, let's make something out of this.
Yeah, it's like Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi at the same time because he wasn't in Double Zeta, so he returns striking back.
Same with Amuro. Like, it's like the return of the new type. Yeah. Like,
so yeah, Tomino was on that level. Like, even though I hate that I complain about Char's Counterattack, and Otto worked on that one. He did some design work. Do we know what he
identified the problem with Char's Counterattack?
I bet he designed the Sazabi, but maybe not.
I think that he did have a hand in some of the Zeon mobile suit designs now that you mention it.
I'm going to just search real quick to see if it says anything.
I'm sure that it's on Ultimate Mark, you know, Mark Simmons, like.
Yeah, something about a Neo Zeon suit. The stuff looks, actually, let me share the screen. I can, and then there we go. Hold up. I can even share it with you. People give me a sec.
No worries.
Okay. Yeah. So now this might just be a concept. Yeah. Hideaki Anno's proposed design for a Neo Zeon mobile suit for use in Char's Counterattack. And what I can see the elements, and it's the curvature, you know, the curvature, but also when you see like underneath things, the lines, that gives it that organic sort of underlining.
That's theme. Definitely the Anno influence for sure.
Yeah. So yeah, you know, that's pretty neat. And I feel like this is probably an article we've probably looked on your channel before. But yeah, I was trying to see if it would tell me anything specifically. Yeah. Okay, let's see. Hideaki Anno is number 8. Oh, on this, where is the 8? I see 7. Is that supposed to be an 8 on the bottom left? I think so, but you can barely see.
Which is crazy to me because that is probably the least Anno thing I've ever seen. Yeah. Like that is, it looks just like an RX-78. Like,
yeah, interesting. Well, okay, so then after Sir's counterattack, we get War in the Pocket, which is a pretty interesting name because, like, I almost feel like it works on a lot of levels. It almost doesn't have to say Gundam. You know, it's not in the same Amuro Char story legacy. It's like its own War in the Pocket.
Yeah.
But also, for someone that was just looking for a sci-fi anime to watch, it's also about that too, you know, without, so that name works on many levels. And then we get to F91, which when I first heard of and saw F91, I immediately went to race car driving.
I think that was intentional, right?
Yeah, like, exactly. And
I mean, they call it Formula 91, like it's,
yeah. And I think that works too, because the way the suit's designed, I also like, you know, I've told you this before. I like late UC because it reminds me of, oh, this is the future. Like this is Gundam. It's almost like watching Back to the Future too, and being like, oh, that's the future there. You know, even though it already happened, you know, but I think F91 and that worked. And then anyway, you get to Victory Gundam, which I think V is probably the main thing there.
Yeah, there started to be this trend where every Gundam had to be associated with a letter, right? Like Zeta was Z, Victory was V, Wing was W, G was G.
G, and then Turn A, which I think Tomino's like, what? I have to use a letter? All right, I'm going to put it upside down.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Which, I mean, come on, he's the ultimate troll. Like he would do something like that.
Yeah, I know. And then, real quick, some other, if we were going to, some other names like Gundam Unicorn, I mean, that's Unicorn by itself. There's a U. Okay. That hasn't been used, but Gundam Unicorn seems cool, especially because of the Anaheim logo, the Amuro logo, you know, it seems like it came from that. And, I think it's almost like with Star Wars, you get to a point where the name means more on context of what everyone knows.
Yeah.
Like that's why they can name something Cuckoo's Doan's Island.
Right.
Yes. I think in Japan, that's like easier to,
Yeah. And it becomes where you don't even call it Gundam anymore. Right. Like when I say, hey, do you remember episode 6 of Unicorn? Like we know what we're talking about. Hey, do you remember Thunderbolt? Like, oh yeah. Thunderbolt, Gundam.
Right.
Thunderbolt.
Like, or Hathaway.
Yeah.
Unless I go to Google and then it's Anne Hathaway, which I don't mind, but not what I was searching.
Speaking of simping.
Okay. Well, we're near the end here. And one last thing I wanted to talk about is I noticed, you know, the Gundam Metaverse is doing its third limited time opening. And I was at, I think it was the Gundam Info Twitter that had a link to it. And check it out, guys, and try it out and let me know what you think. It seemed pretty cool because when you play the game, it puts you right into a game. You don't have to download anything. It's in the browser. Problem with that is it's trying to push really high-end graphics. Not really high-end, but for a browser, high-end graphics.
Yeah.
And you don't get a consistent frame rate. But what was cool about it was I got to make my own character. And as far as a Federation uniform, there is a Federation hat, or you can have Char's helmet. I even had it where I was holding a beam rifle and a shield. Like, it lets you go through all that. And then when you're in the world, I'm running around, and there's, like, I think voiceover from some shows, depending on where you go. Everything was in Japanese. That's the thing. So unless I went to the wrong thing. But it has all these things where you can read stuff. And I don't know if it's other users that are posting stuff, but then there's statues everywhere of different Gundam. There was a store I could go to, but I think it was telling me it's closed for this. But, you know, we've been hearing about the metaverse. we tend to talk about it a lot without getting anywhere, but I think there's something there. If I can hop into my browser, look around, see some cool Gundam stuff for a little bit.
And I'm glad that they're taking their time with it, that they're not like, you know, in a rush to crank out something that's not going to be an immersive experience. Like this is good.
Yeah, so that's a good point, because I think at the end of the day, one thing that Gundam does differently than like Star Wars is they do take their time. I mean, this live action, it's funny, the live action movie is not out yet. And the first thing people think is like, oh, I bet it's going bad. It's like, no, they're trying to do it right. You know, they're trying to, and the same thing with this metaverse. Back when the metaverse was first announced was when everyone announced a metaverse and an NFT. And everyone was like, oh my God. But they're still going about it. And Gundam is a prime IP for a metaverse. So, which,
spoiler alert, guys, next week is all about Adam and I launching G coins, which is going to be our crypto, our crypto Gundam coins.
That's a great idea. Because isn't it where anyone can like make that and then people invest into it? And then what happens? They crashes and people lose their money. That's all right. Well, anyway, guys,
I'm always left holding the bag.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, that was it for this episode. Everyone, thanks for watching and again, or listening. And again, there's a link in the description for putting in your favorite things that happened in 2024 Gundam related. Next week, we're going to go through all of it. We'll even have a special guest on Thursday. So stay tuned for that.
Sweet.
Yeah. So, I guess all have a good day, night, rest of the week, and we'll talk later. See y'all.
Cheers.